McDonald's has a new wearable that burns calories and your skin. Project Fi might be coming to a country near you. Nearby planets, VR exoskeletons, and gummy bear iPhone archery. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1584, recorded Wednesday, August 24th, 2016. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you fresh, high-quality ingredients to cook delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. See what's on the menu this week and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit.
And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage process into the 21st century with a fast, easy, and completely online process. Check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT.
And by Igloo Software. Igloo is an intranet you'll actually like. It connects people with the information they need to do their best work. Try it for free at igloosoftware.com/twit or sign up for a live demo to see it in action.
Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. We are the Abbott and Costello of technology news.
I don't know what they do characteristically. Something like that, right?
Ha ha. Ha ha. Laugh funny.
I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Costello. Not Elvis Costello. I'm Jason Howell, actually. Let's talk about news.
Let's do. Last week, the biggest
news in the world, by the way.
This is the biggest news. Last week, we heard that McDonald's was stepping up its health game by handing out plastic fitness trackers with its Happy Meals. Now, 29 million of the colorful Step It are being recalled after reports ranging from skin irritations to blistering and burns on kids who wore the free wearable. Now, nothing is more important to us than the safety of our customers, said a McDonald's representative. There were more than 70 reports. So they started out slow. There were scattered reports, then they stopped giving them away, and then there were more and more reports, and then they recalled them totally. So these were supposed to blink according to how fast you were moving or
not moving.
And
they counted, right? Yeah, they counted.
I guess so, yeah. I don't know. Like, it's hard. Wearables are hard. You know, the Intel Basis Peak, that burned people. The Fitbit Force caused rash. Did they think they could just create a little wearable for free and make it, put it on kids and think everything was going to be fine?
I mean, it's not free. It's $3.80 based on the receipt that Scott Stein from CNET showed in his video.
Oh, it was $3.80.
Well, for the Happy Meal. So you know, you're paying for it somehow.
Food, yeah. I guess it's sort of harder to make wearable technology than French fries out of animal fat.
As you can see, all he really has to do is tap the base of the watch and it counts as a step. So it's not the most accurate step counter pedometer that there is. But
yeah,
I like my food hot. I don't like my wearables hot, though. And McDonald's has pulled its promotional videos from YouTube. So, you know, there's that. But hey, you know, props for trying, right? Like, I think that probably, I mean, if it wasn't burning you as a kid, you would see those numbers jumping and it might encourage you to move a little bit. That's right. Good, right?
If it's burning you, I mean, it might encourage you to move fast.
That's true. Really fast, yes. Just for the record, 9,500 steps would be required to burn off the 510 calories of a Happy Meal. likely less than that for a child, though. I think that's based on a grown-up.
Okay, sorry.
Which the grown-ups aren't buying Happy Meals,
are they? I
shouldn't
make fun of it. I don't know if grown-ups are allowed to buy Happy Meals. I have no idea.
Oh, there we
good
go.
Question. If anyone knows, please email me.
Well, if they did, 9,500 steps is what's required for them to get rid of it and other things. One of Google's Project Fi features that makes the service frugal for its users is something called Wi-Fi Assistant. It's what has allowed Project Fi phones to recognize vetted open Wi-Fi access points across the country and then connect those Fi devices to them automatically. Doing that actually cuts down on mobile data usage. And in a perfect world, this all happens without the user ever needing to do anything or noticing that anything changed at all. Well, today, Google announced that it's bringing this feature to its Nexus devices in the coming weeks, as well in the U.S., Canada, Mexico, the UK, and some Nordic countries. You'll be able to activate it on Nexus devices in the networking settings. And prior to this, I mean, Fi's US only. So this is a feature that now many more people get to enjoy, but it's still isolated to Nexus.
Now, have you used Project Fi?
I haven't, actually. I would like to. For a while, I thought I was going to sign up for it, but then I realized, like, I don't travel, and I have T-Mobile. T-Mobile's part of Fi, and it, here it's fine. Well,
except
it was,
for in here.
It was great until we moved into this new studio, and now I get no service down in
right.
the studio.
Right, and I do. I mean, because when I, you know, I guess Leo has a Project Fi phone, and he was like, oh, it must be going into Sprint. Like,
it
so
must
that,
be.
That's the so advantage, that's, right? Like, yeah. That's a pretty great advantage.
For sure.
You know, Stan Cook, who watches our show and watches iOS Today, like, he's actually switching from an iPhone to an Android phone for Google Fi. Like,
because of
that,
Fi.
You know, because of the cost is better, just the monthly cost. I think it would be great to have more than be able to access more than one service at once.
For sure. And, you know, now that we work in the East Side studio, I might have to consider Fi as a possibility. I just didn't really need it prior. I do think, as far as this, you know, coming to Nexus devices, I think it's very interesting what we're seeing Google do with it with Nexus right now. And we talked a little bit about it on All About Android last night. But just the fact that up until now, you know, the conversation around Google innovating with Nexus when it has partners, you know, of all different types, creating hardware that it works with to make Android, you know, just more built up and more popular, basically more of a powerhouse. The discussion's always been around, you know, well, Google doesn't want to, you know, offer too much because, you know, they're partners. They're not competitors necessarily, and they don't want to tick them off. I think what we're starting to see is Google kind of turning a corner and saying, you know what, our Nexus devices can go toe-to-toe to anything, and here are special features that you only get on Nexus, and kind of not caring about the whole competition aspect, at least to a certain degree. And I think that's a good thing. So this is, you know, another feature that you, at least right now, anyways, that you only get on Nexus devices, and that's another compelling feature.
Mm-hmm. Well, today is the 5th anniversary of Steve Jobs' resignation from Apple, which seems to be a good time as any for all of us armchair quarterbacks to decide whether or not Tim Cook has filled Jobs' shoes. Now, first, the good news. Apple has, as a company, is much more socially responsible. According to interviews with employees, Apple employees, CNN says the company has been better about highlighting LGBT rights, philanthropy, corporate diversity, renewable energy, and improving manufacturing conditions abroad. But the bad news, of course, is the company has not come out with any visionary product since the iPad. In fact, the only real new product they've released is the Apple Watch, which many, not me, mind you, but many argue is lackluster at best. So, of course, we know we constantly hear about slowing iPhone sales, but sales have really flourished under Cook. You know, they reached 1 billion sales this summer. It's been interesting. There's been a lot of charts, a lot of charts about how Cook is doing. He was relatively unknown before 2009. I mean, a lot of people, unless you were really following, didn't even know who he was. And, you know, he's hired more employees. It's up 60,000 since Cook came on board.
Mm-hmm. I mean, stock price and revenue has doubled in his tenure. That right there just says a lot about what he's been able to do. It really seems like Apple under Cook versus Jobs, you know, profits obviously like insane compared to what they've ever been. Innovation from that perspective, like the Jobs era of Apple was really defined by at least this perception of innovation, whether you agree or not, of whether it was actual innovation, that's open to interpretation. But, you know, there's this, and I believe it, you know, this widely held belief that Jobs was very innovative with Apple and that they really did things or took these categories and redefined them and made them powerhouses. And under Cook, it seems like that's maybe slowed down a little bit, but that isn't hurting their bottom line necessarily. It's just a lot of people, I think, expect that because that's the way it's been. We haven't seen the TV product, whatever that may be, maybe nothing at all, as we've talked in previous episodes. Haven't seen the car product. That's years down the line. So there are areas where Apple, under Cook's leadership, could definitely kind of regain that momentum that it had there. But I don't think it's hurting Apple any. I think Tim Cook's done a pretty remarkable job with Apple in 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're very different. The two of them are very different, but I mean, the secrecy is still exactly the same. Like that hasn't changed. You know, from the Jobs era, like we still really have no idea what they're doing on a daily basis.
Kind of part of their DNA.
Yeah, and we have so many more avenues to do that, but they still really hold things so close to the vest. Which is why a lot of us just follow them so closely, because it's exciting. We don't know everything before they announce it. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're also, as a big company, they need to take a stance on all the things that Tim Cook has been taking a stance on. You know, they really need to, and especially the privacy issue. You know, we can only presume what Steve Jobs would have done faced with the FBI situation. We have no idea. But, you know, it's like they're such a big company. They're such a force in everyone's daily lives that they have to be a more socially responsible company, I believe.
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, maybe history has shown that companies that get this big suddenly have some sort of a social, you know, awareness, a social context that becomes part of the business. I feel like that's, at least in my short kind of view of this, something that we've only really seen in the last couple of years with these technology companies really kind of coming up and being like, no, you know, we have the ability, we have the platform to really stand up for certain things and, you know, ethically, you know, make a statement or whatever. And that's what I feel like I've seen recently. And definitely at the top of that kind of pyramid is Apple with Tim Cook and, you know, the things that he's stood for. By the way, he can unlock $100 million in bonuses based on his work so far in 5 years of leadership. So, you know, smooth $100 million coming to Tim Cook as a result of his good work. You know what they say? Nothing in life is free. They also say if you aren't paying, you're the product. I'm sure they say plenty of other things too, but let's not get distracted here. Let's reel it in. Opera, the web browser that could, released a free VPN app for Android. And it's worth taking a minute to at least look at what's happening behind the scenes before you jump on board. First, the good news, it's free, obviously, and it's unlimited. And it can be routed through points in the US, Canada, Germany, Singapore, and the Netherlands, at least to start with. They have plans to open that up further. It also has a way to block ad tracking. But Opera's business model, as of late, is largely as an ad network. The revenue generated from Opera's mobile ad services and technology, meaning Opera serves ads to you within their free VPN. So that's definitely part of this, you know, why it's free. On top of that, it's worth knowing that Opera underwent a major buyout by a group of Chinese investors a few months back. And there have been some questions as to the motivation behind that acquisition. Just a hunch. I'm just saying, any free VPN, like why? People use VPN because they want, you know, privacy, they want security, they want secrecy for whatever reason. If you're using a free VPN that also serves ads, like my knowledge about ad networks and everything is that they aren't necessarily always tied to anonymous. So just keep that in mind. Like, I'm not saying it's a bad idea outright. I'm just saying, like, keep that in mind. So not all VPN is created equal. And if it's free, that should at least, you know, I implore you to look into it a little bit further.
Well, sometimes you want it for privacy and sometimes you just want it for your Netflix, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. Well,
place where you can't watch.
Precisely. And yeah. And something like this is probably good in certain scenarios, right? Like any VPN is probably better than no VPN if you're at a coffee shop using internet. Mm-hmm. And so, hey, you know, hop on board. Just, you know, keep that in mind. Up next, Brian Clark from The Next Web will join us to discuss a few stories he's been working on. But before that, and it covers the gamut, let me tell you. But before that, let's take a minute to thank Blue Apron, the sponsor of this episode. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone while supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with fresh, high-quality ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals. Each meal comes with a step-by-step, easy-to-follow recipe card and pre-portioned ingredients that can be prepared in 40 minutes or less. You can save time and money. Shopping at the grocery store is 60% more expensive than Blue Apron. If you spend a lot eating out or you shop a lot at high-end grocery chains, well, in this case, you can now spend under $10 per person for healthy home-cooked meals. Customize your recipes every week based on your dietary preferences and choose a delivery option that fits your needs. There's no weekly commitment, so you only get deliveries when you want them. Blue Apron delivers to 99% of the continental U.S., Also, Blue Apron sets the highest quality standards for their community of over 150 local farms, fisheries, and ranchers across the U.S. Seafood is sourced sustainably, beef's raised humanely, chickens are free range, pork is raised naturally, and regenerative farming practices are used for produce. By shipping the exact amount required for the recipe, Blue Apron is also reducing food waste and making the recipes just a little bit easier to follow because you have exactly what you need to make them. Whether it's Japanese ramen noodles, wild-caught Alaskan salmon, or heirloom tomatoes, Blue Apron brings you the best. Blue Apron not only supports a more sustainable food system, it supports happy and healthy families. Cooking together builds strong family bonds, and research shows the Blue Apron families cook nearly three times more often. New recipes are created every week by Blue Apron's culinary team and are not repeated within a year. So things like spiced pork burgers with goat cheese and cucumber corn salad, summer vegetable and quinoa bowl with fairy tale eggplants, shishito peppers and corn, chicken tinga tacos with summer squash and tomato salsa. It still makes me smile when I say that. Check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/twit. You're going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So do not wait. Visit blueapron.com/twit. And we thank Blue Apron for their support of Tech News Today.
And now it's time to check in with a few off-the-beaten-path tech stories. Joining us with his signature brand of tech wisdom is Brian Clark from The Next Web. Welcome, Brian.
Thanks. That signature is kind of nice. I like it. I'm really surprised you guys invited me back after trying to poach Megan and then insulting Jason's home state last time.
It's okay. It's okay. We're actually more than anything just curious to know what you're going to say next.
Yeah, that's part of the fun.
All right.
So the Olympics are over, and we want you to tell us who won. And when I ask who won, I mean who won in the war of how we streamed them to our gadgets.
Microsoft won, and that was kind of surprising to me because we've got all these great gadgets for streaming TV these days, Apple TV, Roku, Amazon Fire TV, and barely anybody streamed the Olympics on them, but Windows PC owners streamed the Olympics at a clip of like 47.5%, I believe, which completely overshadowed everyone, including Mac owners, which were like 14%. Roku, I think, was the biggest set-top box with like 9%. So it was actually kind of surprising. People turned to the desktop rather than the mobile or specialty devices.
Now, I like to throw correlation versus causation right out the window when I talk about technology. But do you think that this means that more Windows users like the Olympics, or it was better to watch in some way on a Windows PC? What do you think?
Wow. I wish we could bring causation and correlation back.
Okay.
I really don't know. It really surprised me. I saw the numbers this morning, I think on the Washington Post, maybe. And I don't know. I really couldn't make sense of the numbers, especially after Tim Cook is basically trying to force down everyone's throat that an iPad is a PC and PCs are dying. But it really seems like, at least in this sense, that there's still a firm footing in the market for PCs, even if it's not for everyday use.
Yeah, like I've been trying to figure this out, and like in my head it makes sense to a certain degree on two fronts. One, if you've got a home setup, in order to run these apps, a lot of times it has to be validated by a cable subscription of some sort. So, you know, it's possible that if people, you know, are watching it on their TV, they're not watching it on Apple TV, they're watching it on the TV because they've got that cable subscription, maybe they've DVR'd or whatever. And maybe PC is so big because, you know, when they're not at home, they're at work and they've got a computer there. And so they validate, you know, through the website, and they have it up on the side because Olympics is running throughout the course of the whole entire day. And I don't know, maybe that's, but I mean, that's a, I guess maybe that's a lot to expect to influence these numbers.
I had similar thoughts. And then another one to me was there are a lot of, especially people in the geek community that have home theater PCs. Mm-hmm. So I was thinking that between the home theater PCs that really haven't turned over into a Roku yet, or just like you said, maybe businesses that just have it running all day connected to a PC. Because in general, wasn't viewership down as a whole? So it just seems strange to me that if viewership's down, the devices we use the most often aren't the ones we're streaming it with.
Yeah, sure.
You watched on the PlayStation View, Jason.
I watched it on the PlayStation View. Awesome. Actually, I'm really positive on the PlayStation View. It was just nice because, you know, we did cut the cord a couple of months ago. We're like, how can we watch? You know, the Olympics is on all the time and there's millions of events, not actually literally millions, but the PlayStation View has the DVR capability. So we paid the $40 for the single month, had the DVR'd everything, and we were able to watch it on our own terms, and that really helped. So I don't know how that influenced these numbers any, and I'm sure there weren't an insane amount of people using PlayStation View to watch the Olympics. I think I feel like View is pretty pretty minor, you know, as far as user base goes.
There were three of us total.
Yeah, there we go. But we were in heaven, let me tell
it
you.
It was. It was really good. I agree with Jason there. And what took you so long to cut the cord?
I don't know. Fear. Fear that I would be missing out on something like this. I mean, is a prime example of that. It's like I can get rid of cable for a lot of the junk food TV that I don't actually need to spend my time watching. But when it comes down to live events, specifically the Olympics is a perfect example because there's so much of it happening. If you have the cable subscription, you have access to all that. I just didn't think there were options and I was scared of it, but I'm happy I did.
And here's the big question. Have you canceled your subscription yet?
Not yet, but I have a reminder in my calendar to do so before I get charged for another month. Having said that, I am not going to miss the presidential debates. So now I'm in this like, well, I guess I could go another month. Sure, another month. And then suddenly, what is it? I have a subscription to something that I'm paying for monthly.
That's much watched TV these days, presidential debates.
Pretty much, yes.
So let's move on to a totally unrelated topic. A story you covered about a newly confirmed planet that's only 4.2 light years away. It's a relative stone's throw, as you call it. What can you tell us about Proxima B?
Well, a relative stone's throw is actually really relative because 4.2 light years away is actually something like 300,000 miles. Oh. And if you're keeping score at home, it's 25 trillion miles. And if you're keeping score at home, that's around 300,000 times further than it is from the Earth to the Sun. So it's relatively close, but relative is relative in this case.
No one's throwing a stone that far, in other words, unfortunately.
Probably not, yeah. But scientists and astronomers, they've had suspicions that this planet has existed for the better part of a decade, actually over a decade, I think. And they just never were able to confirm it. So they put their collective heads together and used some really powerful telescopes. And they finally spotted it and confirmed that it was indeed a planet and that it was inside the habitable zone of its star, which is Proxima Centauri. And being within that zone, it's quite possible that it could hold life, but we're still years away from finding that out.
So it could have liquid water. I'm mm-hmm. glad you said the word habitable outside, because when I was reading it, I was pronouncing it habitable.
That works
for me. Go both ways. Go both ways.
So when are we going?
Well, I'm not doing anything this weekend.
I don't think the question is when are we going. I think it's when will they come here.
I completely misunderstood them.
No, you got it right.
It seems like we're still years away. Right now, we don't even have cameras that are strong enough or telescopes that are strong enough to take a photo of it.
Yeah.
So it's far enough away to where we can't really visualize it without something like blasted out into space and that gets closer. So. That said, I'd say we're, and this is just guessing, I would say we're at least 5 years away from even thinking about sending a telescope that far.
Hmm. All right. Well, finally, you write about a new drone controller that you can make out of an old Game Boy that's sitting around. Tell us what Gautier Hottenberger of the French Civil Aviation University, tell us how he did this.
See, I'm glad you pronounced that one because that's the one I would have stumbled over. So, so give and take. Yeah. Let's just call him Hattenberger.
Okay.
Mr. H.
Mr. H. Yeah. Heisenberg. He had a parrot drone, and he works for a company that creates kind of a ground control setup for PCs that kind of automate some of the flight of drones. And he found an old Game Boy at his parents' house. And unlike most of us who probably would have immediately popped in Tetris or something, his first thought was, can I fly a drone with this? And he set to work creating a microcontroller or a controller out of a Game Boy that it did indeed fly a drone.
So he used an Arduino microcontroller and an FTDI semiconductor to do this. And if I wanted to do this at home, where could I find the instructions to do this?
He released the source code on GitHub, and there are some light instructions there. The YouTube video has kind of a few diagrams that show how it was all put together. But in reality, this is, and I know, Megan, you're an ex-developer, right? So this is something that might be within your skill set, but it's something that I would completely screw up.
Yeah, I don't know. Brian, what about you? Could you do something like this, do you think? But not
the
Brian,
other Brian.
Brian.
The other Brian.
The Brian that does the
I wasn't
show
sure which Brian. If you're talking to me, yeah, I think it would be pretty simple. It's just getting the taking the inputs from the Game Boy and translating it to the computer and then sending it to the drone. But I mean, the microcontrollers and the computers on the drones, me and Padre have programmed in the past. And it's just a different way of transmitting the signal, really.
I think I would be even more impressed, Brian Burnett, if you would do this, but then have a camera on board of the drone that transmits the video back to the Game Boy, and you see it in the traditional Game Boy monochrome pixelated sort of sense.
Yeah.
Then I'd be really impressed.
That would be a lot more difficult. Okay, but I'll get to work on that.
All right, good.
My
That's
experience
all I
with an Arduino is basically making a light blink, and then every now and then I can make one blink in sequence. So
it's a start.
Yeah, baby steps.
It's
baby
not
steps.
For me. But it was really cool. I would love to get an old Game Boy and try it.
Yeah,
for
so sure. He did it with a Parrot drone. I don't know if it can be done with other drones, or is this Parrot specific?
It's supposed to be able to be done with any drone as long as it can send or receive a signal, which I think is all of them.
Yeah.
So.
Well, it's part of the Paparazzi project. They were at DEF CON. Brian Burnett, did you see them at DEF CON?
I do not recall, no.
Well, you can check that out. We'll have a link in our show notes, and you can find a link at the next web in Brian's article. And Brian is very prolific. He has more articles about emoji and many other topics.
It was like, let's bring him on to talk about one of his stories. And then we read through them, and we're like, wow, he really just jumps all over the place. Let's do a few of these suckers.
I really do. Anything that I think might be interesting, entertaining, whatever, is that's pretty much what I write. We've got a lot of freedom at the Next Web.
Excellent.
Well, thank you so much, Brian. So you can find Brian at the Next Web, or you can find him on Twitter. Thanks for coming on.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Brian. We'll talk to you soon.
Tom Foster had some feedback on our discussion with Sam Moscovich yesterday about PlayStation Now on Windows. Tom writes, I'm actually a games developer, and I use a PS4 gamepad as my controller at work. I have to use a community driver called DS4 Windows. It is really amazing that someone has written this, but it is still buggy. I've always hoped that Sony would release a Windows driver, as I use a cable to connect mine to the PC, but with the release of this new dongle that we talked about yesterday, I am losing hope in that entirely, as I then wouldn't need to buy their adapter. A number of my colleagues use the PS Casting to play on their home PlayStations from work, and if that was compatible with this dongle, well, that would be a huge win as well.
Excellent. So get it, Tom, and then tell us how it goes. Love to hear like a little mini review or something like that.
Yeah, thanks for writing in, Tom. Yeah. We love to get your emails, tnt@twit.tv. So you can even send us video, send us voice memos. You can communicate with us in lots of ways.
Mm-hmm. We'll take it all.
After the break, Addie Robertson is here to talk VR haptics. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans, the sponsor of this episode. Mortgages are exhausting, but they do not have to be. Rocket Mortgage brings the mortgage approval process into the 21st century. It's fast, it's powerful, and it's completely online. Rocket Mortgage has taken all the complicated, time-consuming parts of applying for a mortgage out of the equation. If you hate searching through stacks of old files and paperwork, you don't have to anymore. With Rocket Mortgage, you can just share your bank statements and your pay stubs at the touch of a button. That helps you get approved in minutes for a custom mortgage solution that's tailored to your unique financial situation. Even better, with Rocket Mortgage, you can do all of this on your phone or your tablet. It's a quick online process that you can manage from the convenience of your couch. So if you're looking to refinance your mortgage or buy a home, check out Rocket Mortgage today at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030, And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
All right, so Leap Motion is taking a step to make its hand tracking technology a bit more intuitive for users. Joining us to talk about this, and oddly enough, another hands in technology story, is Addie Robertson from The Verge. It's great to have you here. Thanks so much for joining us tonight. So we got two hands in technology stories. So let's start with one here. First up, you wrote about Leap Motion's announcement of the interaction engine today. What shortfalls does this address with Leap Motion technology right now?
So on a really broad level, what this is meant to address is that the physics engines in video games right now are not meant for you actually putting your hands in a game and trying to interact with them. They're sort of meant to detect collisions and make sure that things don't collide. But that means that if you're trying to grab something, that it might bounce away from you. If you try to run your hands through it or throw it, that it's not going to behave the way that you would actually expect an object you were picking up to behave.
How disconcerting has this been as a Leap Motion user prior? Because I understand you haven't actually played around with this improved tracking kind of update. I think this was just kind of teased more than anything today for developers. But what was it like prior to this in your experience?
So Leap Motion's been using what I understand is sort of a prototype of it in their previous demos. So I've tried a little bit of that, and I've tried it beforehand. It's that a lot of the time Leap Motion will work perfectly well, but then there's that one time in, you know, maybe 10 where you try to grab something and it just kind of slips out like soap, or you try to stack one block on top of another and they really hate being together and so they freak out and fly all over the place, which is bad because it's like if you have a mouse and that mouse didn't register one out of every so often clicks, interactivity systems really have to absolutely be stable for them to not be incredibly annoying.
Yeah, and some sort of connection. I mean, I imagine, you know, when you're in the virtual environment and things just aren't working, I mean, that totally removes you from the immersion of the experience. Speaking of kind of the broader kind of VR sense and how Leap Motion sits in that world, what are their ambitions with this technology? I realize this is just kind of like teasing this update and that it's coming soon, but is Leap Motion hoping to be built into some of the kind of more modern VR headsets, or will it always be kind of like a standalone add-on?
Right. So a while ago, they announced that they were trying to get built into headsets. Right now, they're not in the big consumer headsets like the Oculus Rift or the HTC Vive. But if you know what the Void headsets are, the Rapture Gear, they are in that, which lets you use your hands to sort of grab things in a temple. And they've said that they're working with other manufacturers. We don't know exactly what they're going to be in, but they definitely have ambitions to just be part of VR headsets and not a standalone or a headset mounted device.
Yeah, they've certainly been doing it for a while when they kind of introduced this in laptops. I can't remember exactly when it was, like 4 years ago, you know, before VR was even a thing that we were talking about on a regular basis. Are there any other usability issues that you've experienced with Leap Motion that could be addressed in the future?
So the big thing that they will themselves say about this update is that it's for very simple shapes, and that's a lot of what I've used Leap Motion with. Mm-hmm. That for right now, you can pick things up in this sort of controlled environment, but if they actually put you in what was a realistic VR environment with a bunch of different objects of different shapes and sizes, it wouldn't necessarily work that well. I don't know how well it would work because I haven't tried it, but it's something they're clearly still working on. So I think that's one of the next big steps.
Who knows? Maybe they'll build an exoskeleton. Leap Motion is obviously attacking hand control without any additional hardware for the user to wear. But you also wrote today about Dexmo by Dextra Robotics. Tell us a bit about this exoskeleton for VR.
So this is an exoskeleton that the company has been working on for several years now. And the idea is that it provides literal force feedback. So you put this thing onto your hand, and when you grab something, it will tell, okay, there should be X much pressure, and it should kind of push back against you and make you feel like you're actually grabbing something. So there are some situations where you'll have haptic gloves and they'll vibrate or they'll heat up or they'll do something that simulates a texture. In this case, it's much more about grabbing the actual physical object and simulating that feeling of having something solid in your hand. I haven't tried it. I think it's kind of exciting and also a little bit scary looking.
So I'm looking at the prototype right now. Is the resistance applied from the top, from those top levers? So in other words, you go in the virtual environment to reach for a doorknob, and when your hand grabs the doorknob, those top levers will kind of keep your fingers from moving further forward. Is that how this works?
That's how I understand that it works. Yeah. Again, it's one of those things where I feel like I'd have to try it to really understand how well it works,
yeah,
especially to understand how much pressure you actually feel from this. But it's an intriguing idea.
It really is. It seems like the next step. Although at the same time, kind of seems pretty burdensome for at least like for the average user to throw these massive, you know, robotic gloves on their hands. I think it's pretty cool. Do you think, I mean, is tactile force like this? Is this kind of the next, like one of the next kind of frontiers of VR, taking it from this immersive visual and aural experience and bringing the sense of touch into it?
Haptics in general are absolutely a really fascinating part of VR that people are just starting to work on. In this case, they're obviously thinking about consumers, but they're thinking more about like surgeons or, say, people working in the auto industry and trying to design things, or anything that's big enough that you're not just kind of strapping this on to play games, that maybe a company buys it and you're using it in an industrial capacity, which is a really good short-term plan for them.
Sure.
Is there any existing haptic feedback gloves right now in VR that's out for consumers?
So there are a lot of different haptic systems. I can't remember the names of all of them, but there is one that heats up and vibrates. There are a bunch of vibrating vests. There are some very advanced systems that I think are mostly in labs that can supposedly simulate really specific textures, like whether something's smooth or rough, and that's much more on a kind of fine motion level. So you have a billion different ways that people are approaching haptics. None of the ones that I've ever tried have worked particularly well. They're much more interesting proofs of concept than they are products. But again, it's just the start.
Tesla suit by Tesla Studios is one. It's the full body haptic suit with all of these different points and everything to simulate. Sounds interesting.
Problem is that they just it's so hard to find a good fit for all these things.
Oh, I have to imagine. Yeah, it's so specialized. Piece of technology. How do you fit this on the wide kind of gamut of different shapes and sizes of people, and, you know, as well, having all that technology tightly packed in and everything? I have to imagine that's a huge challenge for a bodysuit, especially.
Mm-hmm. It's not like Ready Player One yet.
Not yet. We're getting there. Addie Robertson from The Verge, thank you so much for coming on and talking with us about a few of these kind of advancements that we're seeing here. Tell people where they can follow all of your work online.
So I'm at TheVerge.com, and I am also at The Dextriarchy on Twitter. You can see it right below my face. It's hard to spell.
Yeah, there we go. The Dextriarchy on Twitter. Thank you so much, Addie. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
All right, TNT's fan of the day is, well, also happens to be Twit's supervising producer, Tony Wang, who took this creeper photo of our new home here at the East Side Studio. I had no idea he took this photo until I found it on Twitter.
I did. And you know what? He said that his selfies have been flipping because I'm actually on the other side.
Yeah, it says the word news. I can't even read it because it's backwards. It
says news in progress.
Apparently, Tony is very good at taking pictures of us without us knowing. Good to know. And that look, that sinister look. Of course, if you knew Tony Wang, there is absolutely nothing sinister about that guy.
No, you're right.
Show us how you watch or listen to TNT or how sinister you are. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we will find it. Coming up, a poor but massive gummy bear is sacrificed for YouTube views. But first, and I promise it has a technology angle, but first let's take a minute to thank Igloo Software. They're the sponsor of this episode. People are using 30 different cloud services to get their work done every day. Whether you're using Salesforce, Zendesk, or Google Drive, it's harder than ever to keep track of everything, know where everything is. Now you can easily bring your cloud-based apps together in a modern intranet with Igloo integrations. Igloo is an intranet that you're actually going to like. It's a cloud platform It helps you share files, collaborate on documents, blog updates, coordinate calendars, and manage projects. Unlike other solutions, you can customize Igloo to fit your needs and work with your current IT investments like Office 365, Salesforce, SharePoint, Active Directory, file sharing solutions like Google Drive and Dropbox, and support systems like Zendesk. Igloo also offers a variety of access, authentication, and identity services to ensure that only authorized users have access in private clouds, over SSL, and with 256-bit encryption. It's used by large enterprises and growing companies like User Testing, BDO, American Family Insurance, and ATP World Tour. And you can try it for free. Just go to igloosoftware.com/twit. Or you can sign up for a live demo to see it in action. When you sign up through our link, you're going to get your own Igloo for up to 10 people absolutely free for as long as you want. So make sure and do it this way. Just go to igloosoftware.com/TWIT to check it out for yourself. And we thank Igloo Software for their support. All right. When presented with the world's largest gummy bear, some would simply, you know, nibble off a piece and call it a day. But the staff at Phone Buff decided to see if it could stop an arrow, if the gummy bear could stop an arrow. To raise the stakes, could it prevent an iPhone from being blasted away, from being punctured by that arrow sitting behind the gummy bear? The gummy bear is 1,000 times bigger than a little, is it Haribo? I've eaten them a million times, but never once said it out loud. Haribo gummy bear, weighing in around 2.3 kilograms, slightly heavier than 5 pounds, by the way. And we have video of the impact. It's actually at 2 minutes and 25 seconds in. We get a little slow-mo preview. Do you think it stops the arrow? Mm. No way in heck does it stop the arrow. Apparently that huge gummy bear is not massive enough on the inside.
Okay, so what is the deal with destroying iPhones on YouTube?
It's a thing that people apparently continue watching. I mean, man,
and so
it works.
Am I to believe that the economics here work like this? The YouTube views equal the ability to buy another iPhone? And is there, what's the profit margin here?
Yeah, I mean, I think it actually does work that way for some, but there's so many of these now that I don't know. You know, who knows how they got it? It might have already been a broken iPhone anyways, you know?
Well, usually they open it up. The ones that I have seen, I've watched several of these because I happen to have people in my home who enjoy watching them.
That's why. Yeah. That's why they continue doing it.
Yes, exactly. And so I've seen one stuffed inside a Pokemon and then dropped from a drone. I've seen one wrapped in like some sort of jelly that you make with some sort of, I don't know. And they usually, part of it is that they open it up and they say like, here it is. It's brand new. I'm taking it out of the box. It's pink. It's usually my iPhone that I love so much. And it's sad to watch this. They get burned. They get cooked.
It's a waste. But it's entertainment. It's TV.
Right. Who are we to judge?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, we aren't destroying... Well, I've destroyed technology. Not intentionally, but it happens.
I mean, I have thrown the video of me throwing the computer off the cliff, but I hated that computer, and it was already broken.
It looked like a dumb computer.
It was dumb.
I didn't like that computer the moment I looked at it.
And gummy bears were not involved. Because
they were,
I
would have eaten.
Started about destroying that gummy bear.
You're out tomorrow.
I'm going to be doing some of that tomorrow.
No, don't do it. You should have thrown it off the cliff. I think you will, right?
Eventually, after I get injured. Yeah,
you hurt yourself.
Way less dramatic than shooting an arrow through it.
I know. We did
this is the payoff, though, right here.
This was like a decade before YouTube started. It was maybe 5 years before YouTube started.
So did you make back enough money to pay for this computer that you trashed?
I don't know. Oh. It was on actual cable television back then, so who knows?
Oh, yeah. Bigger profits back then.
Yeah. Yes.
In some way, you made back your money, but you didn't pay for the computer, so I guess but that come out of Leo's pocket? Probably. No.
And we picked it up. We picked up all the pieces.
No. Oh.
We didn't let them wash into the ocean.
Very smart. That's good. You're out tomorrow, right?
I'm gone tomorrow.
What the heck?
I'll not be here.
Why are you doing this tonight?
I don't see how many iPhones I can destroy. Who knows?
Okay, cool. See how many gummy bears you can get and bring them into the studio on Friday. Tomorrow, I will have Father Robert Ballesterra sitting next to me in this studio as a guest for the show. Looking forward to that in Megan's absence. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW, and you can hit us up on Twitter, but don't hit us, at Tech News Today TV.
We would love for you to come see us. Email tickets at twit.tv. Come sit in our beautiful studio audience. Join us. We would love to have you. And subscribe to the show. We'd love to have you that way, too, if you can't make it here.
Yeah.
Find all the ways to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Brian Burnett. Thanks to Patrick DeLahanty for scrolling words endlessly on a screen. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see you all tomorrow. Bye, everyone.